there are a lot of problems with podcasting. I think one of the biggest ones is that younger listeners haven't caught on to podcasting in a way that older generations have. And that's a really big market for Spotify to focus on if it wants to really get as much ad revenue out of podcasting as it can.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, August 9th. Daniel, Michael, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Awin. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two folks. We have first one of our insider intelligence analysts who writes for the Marketing and Advertising Briefing. It's Daniel Konstantinovich.
Hey Marcus, thanks for having me.
Hey chap, thanks for being around. We're also joined by one of our senior account directors. It's Michael Sivins.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Hey fella, yeah, welcome back, welcome back. Today's fact, why is it called a toast when you cheers to something and someone says a few lines that are normally pretty awkward and then you drink some drink, that thing you do, it's called a toast. Why is it called a toast? The term toast, as in drinking to someone's health, comes from a literal piece of spiced or charred toast, a tidbit once routinely dropped in a cup or bowl of wine, either as a form of hors d'oeuvre or to make the wine taste better. Shakespeare mentions this in The Merry Wives of Windsor, in which Falstaff calls for a quart of spiced wine, then adds, "Put a toast in it." By the 18th century, the term toast had been transferred from the floating bread to the person honored by the toast. Most toasts are rubbish, let's be real. They're so clumsy, the person clearly hasn't prepared anything. And you're like, can we drink now? Can we
You have to thrive in the awkward moment. It's fun to create that moment, and like everyone knows it's awkward. You just have to lean into it. Like when someone sings happy birthday to you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you want to shout, enough, please. Why are we still doing that?
if I know anything about giving toast, the longer, the better. The longer and louder, the better.
Yeah, and the more you cry, also good. Do that a lot.
Anyway, today's real topic, why Spotify has been able to remain cautiously optimistic. All right, time for Speed Earnings, a brand new segment where we answer five of the most pressing questions related to a company's recent performance in 10 minutes or less, and then give said company an overall grade for the quarter. Today, it's Spotify's Q2 Speed Earnings. First, a quick summary of the highlights. Spotify made $2.9 billion in revenue. That's up 23%, same growth as last Q2. Revenue from premium subscribers, that accounts for most of their money, was up 22%, better than last Q2. Revenue from ads was up 31%, which was quite a bit worse than last Q2. The music streaming giant added 11 million new monthly active users, MAUs, in Q2, better than the 9 million last Q2. Most new additions joined the premium service, but the company still has more ad-supported users than paid ones. All right, now time for speed earnings. 10 minutes, five questions, one grade, 10 minutes on the clock. It probably more like 11 or 12 because we've got two folks joining us for this one. Let's do it. We start with the first question. Daniel, what to you was the most important figure from Spotify's Q2 earnings and why?
I think that advertising revenues increased 31%. It might not be as much as the previous quarter last year, but we're seeing a major downturn in ad revenues and ad spending across a lot of different social media companies and different sectors. And Spotify seems to have been somewhat immune to it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, expanding the amount of ad inventory available is by far what they call the single biggest contributor to growth of the company's ad business, noted CEO Daniel Ek. There's more ad inventory that's helped them weather the storm thus far. Michael, how about for you? What jumped out?
Yeah, I think hearing 433 million monthly users is pretty impressive. But when you compare it to the overall operating losses, it's amazing to even think that a company with that many users could still be experiencing those types of losses. I think partly for the acquisitions that they're making and the investments in podcasting. So it's really interesting to put those two together.
Yeah. Let's talk about the investments in one second. I mean, a few other things that jumped out to me, reasons why user growth was able to stay so strong. So Spotify said its growth in MAUs, 11 million, was its largest ever in a Q2. So that's pretty noteworthy. Spotify saw less churn, last quarter versus in Q2 2022 than Q2 2021. And then also just the cost of Spotify Premium in the US has stayed relatively affordable. It's at that $9.99 mark. So maybe just subconsciously, it just looks like a better price than 10, 11, 12, whatever double digits they're going to have to eventually dip into when they raise prices. Second question here, gents. Michael, I'll start with you. Spotify sees podcasts as a $20 billion opportunity. Do you think all the money Spotify has poured into podcasts has been a worthwhile investment?
The investments in podcasts, I think, definitely is worthwhile. Mm-hmm. I think maybe that number just comes across as screamingly high. I think that, you know, when we look at the types of podcasts that they're investing in, I have trouble justifying the value of it, but I definitely think that investing in podcasts is the smart move right now.
Yeah. Investors do seem to be a bit concerned because obviously this is a long-term play, and short-term, they're not getting as much out of it as I'm sure they'd like. Spotify said it has 4.4 million podcasts on the platform. That's up from 4 million in Q1. So they've added 400,000 in the last couple of months. And that the number of, they also mentioned the number of users who listen to shows in the period increased in the substantial double digits from a year ago. Daniel, where do you land on their podcast investments thus far?
I agree with Michael. I think it might be a little too early to say. The 20 million figure feels so astronomically high compared to the revenues that it's bringing in now. I don't necessarily think podcasts are going to be a huge driver of subscriptions. I think music is still the main selling point for Spotify, but it will be a big platform for ad revenues because you can advertise to users who are paying for premium. So they don't have ads on their music, but you still have an audience of podcast listeners that you can run ads to, create platforms to help advertisers, creators meet in the middle. But there are a lot of problems with podcasting. I think one of the biggest ones is that younger listeners haven't caught on to podcasting in a way that older generations have. And that's a really big market for Spotify to focus on if it wants to really get as much ad revenue out of podcasting as it can.
Yeah, there's not a lot of children's content thus far. You would have thought that there would have been already, that storytelling for kids would have been a big market, but there are efforts to create more children's content. Mr. Eck noted an uptake in engagement with video podcasts on the platform. Daniel, what's your take on this medium?
I do think video podcasts are a good idea. It's been a big success on YouTube. YouTube has also launched programs to pay podcast creators a lot of money to launch video production versions of their show. I would say video is probably a huge reason why some of the top podcasts today, especially on Spotify, that they value very highly, like the Joe Rogan Experience, became so popular. I think the video component is really huge, but I don't think it's like a silver bullet that's going to magically, you know, get Spotify to that 20 million figure. I think it's an important part of podcasting that can't be ignored if they want to invest in the format, but not the end all be all.
Yeah, Michael, Daniel points out a great example. The Joe Rogan podcast, been top of the charts, seems like forever now, since the beginning of time, definitely since the beginning of podcast almost. But I wonder if, and it does work with him, I do wonder if that's because he has such high profile guests and celebrities. People just want to see them, spend some time with them and get a window into their life. And it's worthwhile watching the show because of that. Other podcasts might not benefit as much from that draw. Where do you land on video podcasts?
I think it's important. It's a nice to have for sure. Maybe I go so far as to say a very nice to have. And I think we can see that, I think, in the future, it being so nice by how connected your Spotify experience is to maybe other devices in the home. Like we have a Sonos smart speaker setup, and there's, you really feel important when you hear the music from one room into another as you walk into it. You feel like you're almost like in a hotel, walking into a hotel room. You're like, oh, wow, the music hasn't stopped. And I think with video podcasts, I think that's sort of like the next step up. So being able to watch and then have that watching experience, that viewing experience, continue on any of the screens in your home, whether it's a TV in your bedroom or a smart home display, you know, on the wall. So being able to actually, you know, see guests, I think, is going to be something that's going to be valued more in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people consuming them in different places. Sarah Fisher of Axios notes that car products will continue to be important for Spotify. This is what Daniel Ek, CEO of Spotify, said, given that over a third of the company's monthly active users are now using Spotify in cars. Over a third. Daniel, can TikTok Music be the next big podcast app? This is a question from Ariel Shapiro, lead reporter of HotPod. She notes that our sister company Insider first noted that TikTok filed an application with the US Patent and Trademark Office for TikTok Music back in May. As well as music and videos, the filing says the new app would also support podcasts and digital radio content. So can TikTok Music be the next big podcast app?
You know, I guess I'll say never say never. You know, I didn't expect TikTok itself to be such a huge thing, yeah. But it almost maybe bullied isn't the right word, but like bullied its way into prominence through a super aggressive ad campaign. So, you know, if ByteDance has that kind of money behind them, and they certainly do now that TikTok is bigger than it was even then, who's to say they can't try and replicate that with TikTok Music? I think with podcasting specifically, it might be hard for them to scoop up enough high profile podcasts that have already been signed away by competitors. And it might be hard for them to create new podcasts that people want to listen to. I think what we've seen from a lot of audio streaming services now is that they're, instead of gathering a bunch of famous people or people that you like to listen to and launching a new podcast with them, they've gone and purchased existing ones. So if there are a few kind of high profile ones that are up for grabs, TikTok can't really just create a new podcast with prominent people to get that kind of listenership.
Yeah. Michael, would you listen to podcasts on TikTok Music?
At 10 seconds at a time?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll be here all week. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because I think the one thing that, you know, podcasts do at their core, it's something that I think is more associated with longer listening. So it's it's really interesting to think of TikTok and podcasts. It seems very, you know, incongruous. So the music aspect of it makes more sense. And I think, you know, like Daniel mentioned, I think, you know, that they were definitely aggressive in getting it out there. And I think that, you know, this integration of music, I think is going to, you know, to strengthen that. I think it's going to make it a stickier experience if folks can be able to, you know, listen to artists, if there's some more discovery going on there. It'd be interesting to see how it all integrates.
Yeah, to Daniel's point, I mean, ByteDance, or TikTok's parent company, they do have very deep pockets. In 2020, ByteDance launched Resso, available in India, Brazil, Indonesia, where Spotify wants to expand, Ariel Shapiro notes. In June, Resso added podcasts to its library, thanks to a partnership with Acast. So it's a thing that they've played with before. Let's see if it comes to other markets. Final question, gents. Shares in Spotify were up 7% the morning after it said it beat Wall Street expectations on revenue, earnings, and user growth. And Sarah Fisher of Axios writes that CEO Daniel Ek told the company he remains paranoid, quote unquote, paranoid about a potential recession, but said so far we're not seeing much of it at all, which is nice to hear because a lot of other companies aren't seeing that in their numbers. Daniel, I'll start with you. What is your biggest concern surrounding Spotify?
I think that its podcasting investments haven't made their way to young users yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michael?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think they're trying to cast a wider net as far as audiences go, and to see the type of investment that they're making, well, I think it is a smart move to an extent. Those numbers are just, you know, so high.
Yeah. Yeah, they're also, the company also eyeing audiobooks as its next, or one of its next major sources of growth. Spotify bought audiobook platform Findaway last year, and Spotify's CEO has called audiobooks a massive opportunity. So we'll see what they do there as well. But they've got lots of plans, at least lots of initiatives, I should say, in place to see where the next source of revenue could come from. That can't be a bad thing. That's all we've got time for the lead. It's time now for the halftime report. We'll start with Daniel. We'll get a takeaway from you from the first half. One takeaway, one thing you think the listeners have to take away with them from this episode, and then also a grade on Spotify's recent performance in Q2.
We've talked a lot about young users and podcasting and ad revenues, but I think the fact that subscriptions are still growing is a really important part of this business that can't be ignored. I think Spotify just has a really solid place in culture that it's carved out for itself with so much personalization, so many social features, like the big Spotify Wrapped at the end of the year that now other even non-entertainment and music apps are starting to replicate. So I think consumers might be cutting costs around streaming services. Video streaming is kind of the first to go on the chopping block. But I think that the fact that their subscriptions are growing in the face of all of that is a sign that consumers kind of think music is essential, or at least, if not essential, have become accustomed to having it at their fingertips.
Yeah, people need music. I can't, of all the subscription that services beautiful. That I would cut, I just wouldn't cut. If Spotify was $100 a month, I'd go, yeah, I'll probably keep it. Because I just can't, you're going to need music some way. The first thing I could see is maybe downgrading to a cheaper ad-supported service. But you need music in your life. So they're in a fantastically well-established position. A grade from you, Daniel, on their performance.
I would say A-. I think the figures look good. I think... the fact that they say they haven't felt the pains of a recession yet is definitely promising. But I guess the minus comes in because they are still spending a lot on M&A. They are still growing losses, and their long-term revenue plans are years out. And we're seeing a lot of other companies have to kind of reel in those years-long plans, like Meta and their metaverse ambitions have had to be curbed significantly in the face of everything that's going on. It is still kind of a rough time, so we'll see if they start to feel that in the third quarter or at some point in the second half this year.
Yeah. Michael, your takeaway and also a grade.
I think at its core, Spotify is doing the things that it's known for really well. When it comes to music discovery, trying to find new artists to listen to, I think Spotify can't be beat. Always discovering new and interesting music. Sometimes I feel like it's almost too accurate, like it's known me all my life. I think that the future of it is, I think it's been successful because it's managed to also create sort of its own ecosystem within other ecosystems, whether it's smart homes. I think Spotify's own ecosystem is really impressive because they keep making these investments that are very interesting that I think will increase people's use time with the app and also creating more shareable experiences and integrations, whether it's through Instagram where you can drop in Spotify song clips in your story. Or integrating with like a Sonos smart speaker setup. I think it's very interesting what they're doing. As far as a grade, I'm going to be cautious and give them a B. Maybe not the most exciting grade, but I stand by it. There's a few things that kind of weigh against it.
A house divided, an A, an A minus, not too divided, an A minus and a B. So consensus B plus.
B plus average, That feels
B
good.
B plus average it is for the company. So B plus average for Spotify. We had Google who had a B. Twitter and Netflix got a C, and Snapchat got a D from our analysts on other earnings episodes that we've done so far. Meta and Amazon still to come. That's what we've got time for the lead. Time for in other news. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, Awin. With unlimited partnership opportunities, innovative technology, and in-house experts available at your fingertips, Awin is the affiliate platform of choice for brands looking to generate more online sales. Retailers that migrate to Awin from competitor platforms experience triple-digit growth and a 63% uplift in revenue. Visit awin.com/emarketer to launch an affiliate program today. All right, folks, we are back today in other news. Why do people buy smart speakers? And is gaming critical for Netflix's long-term plans? Story one. Why do people buy smart speakers? Asks a recent Radio Inc. article. To listen to music. That's the reason, according to data released by Edison Research and NPR, the same reason today as it was in 2017, apparently. Our numbers suggest that just over 100 million Americans use a smart speaker at least once a month. That's 30% of the US population. It'll be 33% in 4 years' time who use smart speakers once a month. But Michael, the future of smart speakers to you is blank.
The future is connectivity. I think these smart speaker setups are getting better at creating easy to use ecosystems that integrate with other app ecosystems like Spotify, Amazon Music. I think smart speakers being able to create these easy-to-use experiences is what's going to drive its growth.
And Daniel, the future of smart speakers to you is blank.
I would say hopeful, I suppose. I think there are a lot of strong use cases for it. I think that smart home integration is still a pretty growing market, to my knowledge. And yeah, I think it just is an extension of, you know, we talked about how people have become accustomed to music, and like having a smart speaker in the home is just a way to continue that kind of constant feed.
Yeah. Yeah. Smart speakers feels like they've been around for quite a while, but yeah, the connected home is incredibly nascent as a space. One other number that jumped out to me from that Edison research and NPR study also noted that half of smart speaker owners, half of them have heard an ad on their smart speaker. Story two, is gaming critical for Netflix's long-term plans? Alexander Lee of Digiday explains, it was only a few years ago when CEO Reed Hastings told shareholders his company saw Fortnite as more of a rival than HBO or Amazon. Netflix made its first executive gaming hire last summer and hasn't stopped poaching talent since from companies like Riot Games and PlayStation. Mr. Lee notes that building up a library of original games could help increase the variety and scale of Netflix's available ad inventory, particularly as in-game ads become more developed. But Daniel, the idea that gaming is crucial for Netflix is blank.
I think it's wishful thinking, at least for now. I think video games are a really big growing market for consumers, for advertising, although we have seen game sales start to slow recently. But I mean, game development is such a costly, long, and difficult process that even giant companies that have been doing it forever still mess up all the time. We just had a big studio called Aspyre that's working with the Star Wars license cancel a game that had been in development for years. The same thing happened to Activision Blizzard with a mobile game, which is where Netflix's focus has been so far. It's been on mobile games. It is a nice service to flesh out benefits of a subscription, but if they want to make it a core part of the business, it's going to take a long time and a lot of money.
Michael, the idea that gaming is crucial for Netflix is blank.
I think curation. I think I agree with Daniel. I think that as far as Netflix's goal to create and fill ad inventory, this tracks with that. I think it was very interesting, and I've been following this because I'm wondering if this is down the road, like you're watching. I'm thinking of this more of the, you know, the innovation angle. Like, am I going to be watching something, and then is it going to pause? And then for me to keep watching, do I have to play a game? Do I have to beat a certain level? You know, is a character in the show or movie I'm watching now going to be in a game that I now have to interact with? So it's these types of experiences that I'm immediately thinking of. But I think, you know, practically, it makes total sense. They're trying to, you know, fill inventory with ads. How do you do that? Well, you create more space. And I think by curating this collection of games, I think it allows them to do that, because it's also smart because I think with games, nobody is surprised when they see an in-game app. But I think if you're a Netflix, if you're a longtime Netflix user, I think that experience of all of a sudden seeing an ad with, you know, something that you're watching is going to be a more jarring experience.
Yeah,
I think I might disagree, actually, that people who play games are accustomed to seeing ads. I think in mobile games, I think that's definitely true. I think a banner ad or like a ad interrupting play is very common and something people are even willing to pay to get rid of. But in other parts of games, I think consumers have shown that they are very ad averse and they are not happy about early news about Microsoft, Sony, Anzu, all these companies starting to invest in in-game advertising. And I wonder, you know, I think that mobile games could present a lot of ad space for Netflix. But, you know, when they first announced this news a while back before all of their downer subscription updates, I think people really viewed this as Netflix making a play for just being a broad home entertainment company. And I feel like that is still probably the focus of their gaming investments. I think the idea that Michael suggested of sort of interactive ads is definitely interesting. But yeah, I think that Netflix still kind of has, I'm not sure that they're entirely focused on games as an ad revenue source as they are a reason to subscribe. Eventually, who knows, maybe games could break off and be their own subscription service.
Yeah.
Separate from Netflix, you know, video or streaming or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you look at the types of games that Netflix is curating and announcing, they're all very mobile. You know, these are not games that I think when you look at, there's not so much story as you would think in some of them, maybe with the Stranger Things game. But I think it'll be interesting to see these types of games that have a Netflix stamp of approval.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We shall see. Lots to figure out for Netflix, gaming, ads, and plenty else. That's what we've got time for today's episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Daniel.
Thank you. It's always fun.
Yes, sir. Thank you to Michael.
Thank you. Yeah, this was great.
Yes, indeed. And thank you to Victoria. She edits the show. And thanks to everyone listening in to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast made possible by Awin. Tune in tomorrow for another episode of our Reimagining Retail show, where we'll be talking all about what's happening in the wonderful world of connected fitness.